Welcome to Talk with Water, a podcast that takes a deep dive into the world of water with those who are making waves. My name is Todd Butler, and I'm your host for Talk with Water. I'm also the principal of Collaborative Water Resolution, which you can find at waterdisputes.org. In addition, I'm editor-in-chief of Texas with Water and the Texas Water Journal. Both publications are free. It's, March 27th here in just outside of Wimberley, Texas, and I'm with David Baker, who is the executive director of the Watershed Association, and with Robin Gary, who's the director of Watershed Protection and Conservation Science for the Watershed Association, and we're visiting Jacob's Well. And for those of you who are not familiar with Jacob's Well, you know, it's really one of the hydrologic features in Central Texas that everybody, you know, really, you know, is aware of and thinks about and is always kind of watching to see what's going on with it. And so, David, why don't you tell us why that is? You know, what's the importance of it, and how does it fit into Wimberley and Hays County and the, you know, kind of the growing community that's all around it?
Well, thanks, Todd. And welcome to Jacob's Well Natural Area. Jacob's Well is an artesian spring that comes from about 140 feet deep in the Middle Trinity Aquifer. And the caverns have been mapped up to 7,500 feet back into the aquifer. So this, we think, is the second longest underwater cave in Texas. Huh. And it's the primary source of spring flow for Cypress Creek, which runs through Wimberley, the beautiful Blue Hole Regional Park, and then contributes to the Blanco River. So it's a really important karst spring. But we've seen, and, you know, I think 2000 was the first time that Jacob's Well we know of in modern times stopped flowing. And now about five times since then, including right now, there's been no flow from the well. So this, in many ways, Jacob's Well is like the canary in the coal mine for the aquifer. Jack Sharp from Jackson School. Mm-hmm. Goes out here
at UT Austin.
And I asked him, I said, Jack, you know, where's our J17 well to tell us about when we should cut back on our pumping? And he pointed down at the well, right. Said, there it is, right there.
Right. J17 being the, you know, the important well in measuring what's going on with the Edwards Aquifer in the San Antonio region, right?
Yeah. And it's what is the guide for curtailments, for cutbacks during drought. And so now with the Jacob's Well groundwater management zone that the Hays Trinity Groundwater Conservation District has created, Jacob's Well is now a curtailment measure for those public supply wells that are in that zone. But unfortunately, that's still not enough curtailment to keep this flow going with the current demand on the aquifer.
Gotcha.
So we're seeing we've seen a reduction of about 17 inches less rainfall in the past year than we normally have, but we're also seeing an increase in groundwater pumping, which is drawing down the water table and has created essentially this no-flow condition where the water table has kind of reached the same level as the spring.
So, Robin, we're in a drought and it's impacting Jacob's Well, as David just said. Can you kind of describe the current drought situation and also what we're seeing here so that people have kind of a visual picture of what the well looks like today compared to what it might normally look like?
So right now we're sitting on the banks just downstream from Jacob's Well. Normally my feet would be dangling in the water if it were any sort of flow coming from Jacob's Well. But right now that we've reached a condition of zero flow. So we've had a number of days, even in 2023, of zero average daily flow. So that means at no point during the day we have seen flow coming from Jacob's Well. Jacob's Well is influenced by drought, but also by groundwater pumping, as David said before. We have all of the communities in western Hays County are groundwater dependent communities, whether or not it's from a private well or from a public water system, all of the water in Western Hays County, unless it's rainwater, comes from the ground. The I-35 corridor communities typically will have a conjunctive permit so that they have both surface water and groundwater, or like Austin, just relies solely on surface water. But out here, the only water supply is the Trinity Aquifer. And that's the same one that supplies the springs like Jacob's Well and the springs along the Blanco that provide the base flow for our important creeks like Cypress Creek and the Blanco River. Normally, we would have enough flow to fill up the swimming area and allow folks to come and swim and enjoy this beautiful oasis. But this year, the county has decided not to open it up for swimming because with no flow, without water, you can't have water quality. And last year, towards the end of the swim season, flow got so low that it impacted the water quality for the swimmers, and it was unsafe because of the added bacteria that the swimmers were bringing to the normally very, very pure aquifer water.
So we're also in a drought, as you mentioned, I guess this is the persistent, kind of bullseye of exceptional drought in Texas right now. If you look at the drought monitor, talk to us a little bit about that, how that drought is maybe similar or different than some of the more recent droughts.
Yeah. So this one is definitely pretty prolonged. The springs are telling us that the water levels in our supply aquifers are low. And we've heard lots and lots of reports from well owners that they're having trouble with their wells. They can't get enough yield, or their pumps have gone dry because the water levels have dropped low enough to be concerning. So these springs, if we watch them, the reason why they're referred to as the canary in the coal mine is because when the springs start slowing down, then we have an indication of what our water supply looks like in the aquifers. Groundwater is a really hard thing to study, and it's really hard for people to embrace as far as a concept goes because it's out of sight and out of mind. People just think it's going to always be there. But really, just like Lake Travis, where you have water levels going up when there are floods and wet times and going way down when there are drought times, that's the same thing that's happening in the groundwater system below us.
So I'm just, looking at Jacob's Well, and you're saying there's no swimming. There's nothing to swim in, I guess, except the main opening, down into the cave and all that. But other than that, you could maybe just get your feet wet. And that's about it.
That's right. Yeah. Generally, in the summer, the county has about 30,000 swimmers that register online and come and swim here in the summer. We reportedly have between 300,000 to 500,000 visitors just to the natural area. Blue Hole has about 60,000 swimmers, and they have, I think, 500 people a day that come through that preserve. And so these are such important, iconic places in our community, not only for their environmental just beauty and the, just the sustenance they give to the locals, but also as a attractor for tourism. And that is really our number one business here is ecotourism. About 80% of our local sales tax comes from overnight lodging and folks coming from out of town to, to see these great places.
For Wimberley.
Yeah, for Wimberley. Yeah.
And so, just thinking a little bit about Jacob's Well and thinking about San Marcos Springs and Kamal Springs, got endangered species there, which led to the development of a whole different regime of management for those systems. You don't have endangered species here associated with Jacob's Well, do you, or anything?
There are a number of obligate groundwater species that live here, but they are found in other parts of the aquifer too. So it suggests that this is an aquifer system that's connected throughout the hill country. But there's no specific endangered species that's been found yet. There is one very notable crustacean named after our David Baker here.
You have a crustacean after
Stigmabromus bakeri. It's a little cave shrimp that Gene Creech and and Peter Sprouse years ago discovered in here about 700 feet in the spring. It looks just like a little shrimp, and they did years of DNA analysis and are like, this is a unique species. This isn't found in other places. They since have found it at Blue Hole Springs down on the Blanco River and maybe a couple of other locations locally here. But they informed me about a year ago that they were going to name it after me. And I feel very honored. My kids were very impressed by that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Scientists express gratitude in weird ways, I think. Yeah. But you've done a lot to have a species named after you. I think you absolutely deserve it.
You have. I mean, I'm trying to think when
and
I
it's no small feat.
You've been doing this for how many decades now?
It's about 30 years. Okay. I think we maybe met right there at the very beginning when you were with the Guadalupe-Benco River Authority. And we've been monitoring for Clean Rivers Program now for 20 years. This is the 20th season that we've done that for Cypress and the Blanco. And went from one site quarterly now to over 13 sites, many of them monthly and some quarterly. So much more data that we've collected on these systems. Robin's, been working on this for 25 years when she was with USGS and then Barton Springs District. Much of the research that's been done has been done by volunteers, the districts and working with, this cohort of including Marcus Gary, Robin's husband, who's with the EAA. Very instrumental in, gauging this, measuring it for the first time, starting to do the exploration of the species and the aquatic life here, and then really looking at the larger recharge zone, which now I mentioned is in the groundwater management zone. But the association's focus also has been, we're a land trust, so we've now conserved about 500 acres in the headwaters here above that are in a critical recharge zone. But we do still have big development, that's pumping, adding houses. There's probably 25 houses being built as we speak up here. Mm-hmm. And each one of those has taken about 150,000 gallons out of the aquifer that would have been coming out of the creek. So that equation, the math is not looking good for us.
Yeah.
It's a bank account that we've overdrawn, and we're praying for rain, but we also need to reduce that pumping, especially during these critical periods.
So we're talking about the Trinity aquifer here, but it's connected to the Edwards aquifer. And, just kind of noting that, there's a lot of concern right now about San Marcos Springs. It's pretty low. And I've heard some folks saying, they're kind of surprised how San Marcos Springs is reacting right now. And I'm kind of wondering about, is that also related to, there's so much more development now along the Blanco and over here, and that, you're seeing some impacts to the Edwards that hadn't occurred in the past because of what's going on here in the Trinity.
Absolutely. So the Trinity Aquifer is a contributing source for the Edwards Aquifer. What makes it past our pumps up here rolls downhill underground into the Edwards Aquifer. And so just like the inflows to a reservoir like Lake Travis, when the inflows or when the contributing water from the Trinity is so low, you're going to see impacts downstream. And it's not surprising that the Edwards Aquifer is also going down at an alarming rate. This has the capacity for being another historic drought. I'm getting tired of saying that, but if we don't get rain and we keep pumping, this is a tipping point for sure that we've reached.
Right. You never know when you're in the next drought of record, when you get in a drought.
Yeah, it's hard to tell when you're in the middle of it.
Right. There's no published end date.
I think one of the things that gives me hope is that just with, you know, the Wimberley One Water School, we've proven that we can design and build more intelligently.
Tell us about that, because so, most people will not be familiar with what you're talking about there, what the school is.
We talk about development coming and each house adding or taking away water. Well, if we can design buildings to use less water, then we would be in a better situation. And the example that the Watershed Association has really worked hand in hand with the Wimberley ISD on was Blue Hole Primary, which is Texas's first one water school. And that school was built and opened in 2020. And looking at the data from there, we can see that the numbers compare favorably compared to, for example, a standard build like Jacobs Well Elementary with similar size population of students. The one water school uses half the potable water than Jacobs Well Elementary does, the standard build. And it does that by using a site harvested supply. So they collect AC condensate and rainwater when it rains to use for non-potable uses, such as toilet flushing. And that water is recycled on site on a reuse field that is an enhanced playing field that's irrigated subsurface. 8 inches below the surface, there are irrigation lines with advanced treated wastewater, and it keeps that field green even in the depths of the drought, because all the kids have to do is flush the toilet and it adds a little bit of water to the plants on that reuse field. It's a fantastic example of how to utilize one water concepts to address a water shortage issue. And that is not just unique to Wimberley. It's all over the Hill Country. We're going to be experiencing those water shortages. This is a very good way of preserving the water uses for that potable water for potable water use and using site harvested supply that we can collect from our buildings and harvest for those non-potable uses.
That's great. Do you see evidence that other communities are taking a look at what Wimberley Independent School District did and thinking, hey, maybe, you know, we're seeing all this growth and we're having to expand or build new schools. Maybe this is, you know, a model for doing that.
Yeah, there has been a lot of outreach from other school districts. I think, you know, Robin, we've heard from what, 4 or 5 different school districts that have come for tours and are interested in how to do this. And one of the other benefits is that we estimate it will save the school district about $1 million in water and sewer rates over the next 20 to 25 years, be invested back into their programs. So we think One Water is, you know, one part of the future for water in Texas, and One Water being all water, no matter where it is in the water cycle, has value, whether it's wastewater, gray water, black water, rainwater. We can utilize it. And the other part of that building that's so exciting too is that it has nature-based green infrastructure on it. It captures that stormwater, treats it before that gets released back into the environment, because that the drainage goes down and dumps right that close to Blue Hole there from the school. So, you know, we're excited about this. I think it's, you know, being the fastest growing county in the United States, we have to, we've realized we have to become the experts in sustainable regenerative development. And a project that we're super excited about that somewhat related, the Watershed Association just bought the old Baptist Church that's at the entry of Blue Hole. And it's a 6.5 acre site. It's 30,000 square foot of buildings on it. But we plan to develop a watershed center there that would be performing arts, cultural arts, environmental education, a center right on the square there that would be used the Living Building Challenge standards, which is a really fantastic framework that looks at every aspect of a building, water, energy, the beauty of it, the materials, sourcing those materials, integrates that into actually a net positive building. It's actually sequestering carbon, that's creating its own water, that's not impacting the environment. It's actually regenerating it. So we're excited about that project. It'll probably be, you know, 2 or 3 years of work planning and developing that. But we think if we can, you know, show, you know, Joe Day, our good friend, who passed last year, was our board, original board member. He used to say, you know, if we can get the pollen of this conservation ethic on people when they come here and they see what we're doing and they learn from it, they'll take it and spread it to their communities, and we'll spread this conservation ethic beyond the valley to a larger audience. And with, I think we had 28 countries represented in people who come to Blue Hole and the Well. So this has become kind of a global, you know, destination for people who are, I would call them water lovers, and want to see this kind of beauty. So we want to respect that, honor it, manage it in a way that so we have water for them to come and see. And so, yeah, it's a challenge, Todd. As you know, it's, I mean, this water, you know, goes down the Blanco River, goes back in the Edwards Aquifer close to San Marcos, and generally it comes out of San Marcos Springs. But if we aren't feeding that water there, that may be part of the problem. But also during drought times, that water goes all the way to Barton Springs in Austin. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all this water is connected. Why should people in San Antonio and Austin care about Hill Country conservation? Well, that's where their water comes from, and that's how it stays clean. So conserving these Hill Country watersheds is vital for the future of this whole region.
So you've got a groundwater district here, and it's a single county district, and you know, it sounds like they're working with all of the you know, water users, and they have some restrictions in place right now. And just kind of curious how you see those restrictions going. Are they you see generally, you see people complying with them? Do they appear to be adequate restrictions? I mean, you know, every time you get into a really big drought, it kind of tests your policies you put in place, and you may not exactly know how. I mean, even models are great, but you know, all models are wrong, right? Some are useful. And so just kind of curious how that's going in terms of you know, people reacting to these drought conditions and either, you know, reducing their water usage or not.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think an analysis, kind of a post-event analysis of what the drought performance was of the permittees is absolutely in line. We've seen heavy impacts from drought and groundwater pumping this year that have impacted the bottom line of Wimberley and the Wimberley businesses and residents here. So I think taking a look at what those numbers tell us is a smart way to go about looking at those tools that the Groundwater Conservation District has. Now, they have an innovative set of tools, but every time, you know, when you're learning to use those tools, you get better and better at it. So I think this is the first time that it's really been tested, or maybe the most intense time that it has been tested. And we need to go back and look at those numbers with the partners, with all of the Cypress Creek partnership partners, because this impacts everybody from Hayes Trinity, GCD, downstream to the cities of Wood Creek and Wimberley and GBRA, the Guadalupe River Blanco Authority, Hayes County. All of those partners have a stake at the table, and we need to do that analysis and see what's working and fix what's not.
So let's kind of wrap up with some thoughts about the remainder of the year, because, you know, we're not into April yet, and, you know, the drought's going pretty strong, and we're kind of looking at what might happen, what might not happen. La Nina seems to be fading finally, which could be good news if it, depending on when that happens and how that happens, and might mean a little more rain. You never know. What are people thinking about for the upcoming summer if the drought continues along this same trajectory? About, you know, what kind of measures might be in store?
I'll take it first, and then you can wrap up, David. But right now we're going into the highest water use time period of the year, and we're going into that period with the lowest groundwater levels in the monitor well network that we've seen. Our spring flow, both here and at the base flow springs for the Middle Trinity and the Blanco, is lower than they've ever been recorded.
And so just to put some brackets on that, the data goes back to when?
So for the Middle Trinity Springs, the base flow springs for the Trinity, that goes back to 2016. Pretty recently, the Edwards Aquifer Authority installed the gauge after the 2015 flood. And then here at Jacob's Well, the continuous record starts in 2005, but the Watershed Association and the Texas State folks have been monitoring flow since before 2000, right?
Late 90s.
So it's historic. We're at the lowest point that we've seen, and we're just about to enter the highest water use time period where people are watering their lawns and watering their gardens and using a lot more water than you would see in the winter months.
Anything to add?
Yeah, you know, I think the big thing is, if people can just not do that outdoor watering or do it one day a week, you know, really cut back, that's 60% of the water use is lawns outdoor. Right. Native plants don't need that water. They can survive through the droughts. But I understand people want to, you know, have their homes look nice. But that's the number one thing people can do if they really want to help, is to cut back on that outdoor water use. I think long term, you know, we have been in discussions, very productive discussions, with both City of Wood Creek, Wimberley, Hays County, the Groundwater District, Aqua Texas, Wimberley Water Supply. We have a cohort there that is focused on some things we could do, like move the big production wells outside of the management zone. That's a big one. Fix the leaks, 35% line loss. That's some low-hanging fruit there.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot. And, you know, that's what the reduction is, that 30%. So, you know, that would be a big help.
Do you have a prospect of getting any infrastructure funds?
I think it's difficult because Aqua is an investor-owned utility, so they're not eligible for those state or federal funds. Okay. as a corporation, private business. But we're talking about some potential partnerships. We're also talking about improving their effluent to type one so that can be reused, building infrastructure where we could get that out to places that need that water. Certainly new building, incorporating purple pipe, incorporating this one water approach. So those conversations are going on. We're working on kind of a memorandum of understanding that could sort of codify those agreements and set a course forward where we can really look at watershed-wide governance of these water, our water assets. And I think it's proven. We can do it. We can cut back. I mean, the One Water School is a great example. I think a lot of it is just awareness. It's just people, us becoming aware that their water in their tap is the same water that they see flowing down Cypress Creek, making that connection, getting people to bring their kids and enjoy the waterways here and really feel a sense of stewardship for that. And then I trust people will make the right decisions, but it just does become just a math equation, right? There's so much that goes in, so much that comes out. So that awareness and keeping people conscious of where we are in the drought cycle, that's something we're working on at the watershed to bring more attention community-wide to that, because people see it rain, they're like, oh, it greens up, we're not in drought anymore, but you still see that big bullseye. Yeah. And we're right in the middle of that. Right. So right.
Hydrologic dry compared to meteorological or some of the other two classifications. Aquifers and lakes and rivers, you know, don't reflect the recovery.
That's right. And so, we think it's worth it to focus, not only our attention and what we can do individually, but investment from the community in protecting these watersheds, investing more in the land program, incentives for landowners to conserve their land. I know as a land trust advocate, how important that is to these the long-term sustainability. And, I look at Hays County in the late 90s when I started this work, or maybe early 90s, and we had one 15-acre park, Dudley Johnson Park. And since that time, collectively with all the land trusts working in Hays County's investment through their Parks and Open Space bond, there's now been over 30,000 acres that have been put into conservation. And that is really an incredible thing to say in a county that's the fastest growing county in the United States.
I remember working on the HCP like 20 years ago. I was like
the Habitat Conservation Plan.
Yeah. Thank you. I violated my own rules. But I was like the most, ancillary player to that. But I was going to the meetings and they were here in Wimberley and we were discussing it. And so I think, part of what you're discussing there is, part of that effort, right? To preserve those lands that are a key to not only Jacob's Well and Blue Hole and maybe San Marcos Ranch, can't remember.
Yeah.
But trying to preserve what you can before Hays County is really fully developed, right?
Yeah.
Got to preserve what you can before you can't.
Well, and not only preserving the water systems, but the biodiversity that depends on those systems. We have some of the most unique species and just incredible diversity of wildlife here. But if we don't have that water, and cypress went on the impaired list for low dissolved oxygen because we don't have those flows, we don't want to be on that list. We've worked hard to stay off that list. And and some of this obviously is out of our control. It's, up to God when it rains. But at the same time, I think the projections are we'll stay in this dry period through next summer, potentially a neutral period in the fall. We could get some rain before we went to El Nino, maybe the first of next year. So that's going to be a tough summer, I think, if that's the forecast.
Gotcha. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up. And I just want to thank you, David and Robin, for, having me out here to see Jacob's Well. It's been quite a while. And, it's obvious that the drought's really taken a toll on it. And so just to recap for everyone, I've been meeting with David Baker, who's the executive director of the Watershed Association. I got right. And Robin Gary, who is the director of water conservation and science for the Watershed Association. And so thank you to both of you.
Thank you, Todd. Yeah.
Glad you could come out.
Anytime there's a free lunch involved,
I promise free lunch.
Well, you certainly implied it. Let me just
say that. Okay. Well, thank you anyway.
That's kind of wrapping up our discussion about Jacob's Well and Trinity Aquifer and the ongoing drought. And I appreciate everybody listening. This is just another episode of Talkless Water, but one that is a lot more fun to get out in the field and walk around and look at things and stuff than it is to, talk to somebody over Zoom. So thanks for everyone for tuning in and listening to Talkless Water. Let's talk water again soon.